Lawfela Podrig, son of Gwit, Majin Wa August Falcherov Gideon Glor. Good morning, bit of Gwelga there for you this St. Patrick's Day morning. Are you well? Hope you're well, hope you're in good form. Gonna have a Guinness or two later on, maybe you'll join me. Before that though, this is Sunday View. It's exactly 11 o'clock, that's UK time. That's not quite British summertime, that's next weekend I think. It's GMT, thanks for joining me. Going to have a look through the front pages of the UK's Sunday newspapers. One or two stories inside, but we're going to feature heavily this morning the attack on Friday that has seen 50 people murdered in New Zealand, attack on two mosques. I know you've been following that, and I'll be interested to get your opinions as we go along. It is St. Patrick's Day, it is Sunday View, welcome to it. My name is Richie Allen, it's always brilliant to be with you. Let's get on with the programme.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Indeed, that beautiful song you heard just before I came on was Phil Coulter's song, sung by the great Luke Kelly, Scorn Not His Simplicity. One or two of you asking me about that. Let's do the show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, Luke Kelly is no longer with us, of course. One time a member of the Dubliners, an absolutely beautiful singer of ballads. Phil Coulter's song, Scorn Not His Simplicity. One or two people hearing it for the first time today. That's all right. That's no bad thing then, is it? Let's crack on. Loads to talk about. Before I do that, though, my friend Jade has been in touch with me. Good morning, Jade. Hope you're well. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Richie, she says. And once again, it's my mum, Pat's birthday, and my dad, Peter's, on the 20th. So it's Pat's birthday today. Happy birthday, Pat. And Peter will be... his birthday will be in a few days' time on the 20th. And she's asked me to find a song by Crosby, Stills and Nash. Jade, I'm going to disappoint you. I don't think I'll be able to access that this morning. But I'll find something Irish to close out the programme with in honour of Pat and Peter Martin. All right, thanks very much. As usual, the programme can be... You can contact me through Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Looking forward to hearing from you this morning. Now, I'm going to run through quickly the front pages of the papers. By the way, the greeting that I greeted you with. Again, I'm being asked questions. Lawfela Podrick, son of Gwit. That basically says, Happy St. Patrick's Day to ye. And Wajin Wa August Falcherov Gideon Clore. That basically means good morning and welcome to the programme. My Irish is still fairly decent. My Gwelia, I'm proud to say. Guinness or two later, maybe. Sunday Telegraph. The headline on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph reads, May begs patriotic MPs to back deal. That is self-explanatory. Theresa May, her deal, the deal agreed with the European Union, has been rejected twice now by MPs at Westminster. It will return, apparently, this week. What sort of assurances May will get from the European Union before then is anybody's guess. But she's begging her MPs to back the deal. Same on the front page of the Sunday Times. Back my Brexit or we'll never leave, says May. No need to dive into that too deeply. It's basically about May telling Conservative MPs that if they don't back her, they'll end up with no Brexit at all. According to the Sunday Times, May will warn Tories that if they don't support her, they will get a Hotel California Brexit. Where have we heard that one before? That isn't new. Where, in the words of Deagles, who'll be in Manchester in June, and I'll be there, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. The Sunday Telegraph is reporting, I'm jumping between the Times and the Telegraph here, the Telegraph is reporting that May's team spent Saturday negotiating with the leaders of the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland over a two-part plan to win their support. So there is a bit of Brexit on the front pages of the newspapers. The Sunday Express front page, Brexit, it's now or never, it's now or never. According to the Sunday Express, it's the same story. May saying it's coming back for the third time. If you don't back it, you'll get no Brexit at all. Some of the broadsheets have, as well as these Brexit stories on the front page, there are stories about the shootings in Christchurch, New Zealand on Friday. Okay, on the sidebars, there are stories as well. There is a picture on the front page of the Sunday Express of young 3-year-old Mukad Ibrahim. He's among 50 people shot dead on Friday. Very young boy. We'll talk about this in a minute. The Mail on Sunday, comic relief was TV ad for Corbyn. What is comic relief, Richard? Seeing as we're speaking a little bit of Gaeilge this morning. My name, Os Gaeilge, is Richard. Richard O'Halleen. What's comic relief, Richard? Well, comic relief is an annual festival of virtue signalling by Z-list celebrities and one or two A-listers who get junkets to Africa where they are wined and dined off camera, but on camera they hold African babies and they tell us that Africans are helpless and need our money. Africans are not helpless. This is mythomania. Revisit Richie Allen shows of yore, where I have explained what mythomania is and how it infests the mainstream media, but also the so-called alternative media. Mythomania. It's a virtue signalling festival. Look at the poor black babies. We've got to send money their way, but of course they don't get any money. They get vaccines. Apparently some Tories were so cheesed off at comic relief that they've been contacting the BBC in their droves. They said that the programme was exaggerated and it was lefty and full of propaganda. The BBC? Propaganda? Surely not. Apparently the Tories were pissed off because some of the more recognisable celebrities were speaking during the programme about poverty at home here in Blighty and how bad it is. But it is bad. Poverty here is at its worst ever levels. Record numbers of people who actually work, God love them, really do work, have to go to food banks because they can't afford to, you know, put food on the table. Child poverty is as high as it's ever been in this country. And hundreds of thousands of people are homeless. When they say, well, we think altogether about 10,000 people are homeless, they are lying through their sphincters. Multiply it by 10 or 20 and you'll probably get the more accurate figure. And shockingly, and I've discovered this myself when I've been out and about in Mancunia, I've been told by rough sleepers, they've said to me when I've had a little chat with them, they've said, do you know I actually work 3 days a week? I'm like, you're shitting me. No, no, I actually do. And they've proved it to me. These are non-addicted, non-substance abusing people. So it's more like hundreds of thousands. So the Tories are whinging, saying that the BBC was a big lefty festival on Friday. And they probably wanted it to be, the BBC. But the fact is, it's true. It's true. Front page of The Sun on Sunday. Hate will not win. The Sun on Sunday. Coverage of the shootings at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand on Friday, where 50 people so far, that's what they've told us, that so far the death toll is 50 people. Pretty horrific thing. It's 9 minutes past 11. St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. Let's talk about this. I'm going to read the BBC website now. When I'm reading the words of others, I always tell you. Okay, so when I'm reading something from somebody else, I tell you, and I will tell you. So this is the BBC, their website this morning. The man charged over Friday's twin mosque attacks in the New Zealand city of Christchurch is believed to have acted alone, according to police. Brenton Tarrant, Australian, 28 years old, a self-described white supremacist, live-streamed the attack on Facebook. Three others arrested afterwards are not believed to have been involved, Police Commissioner Mike Bush said. Now, I do want you to keep that in mind, please. Three others. I mean, why did CNN, did Fox, did C-SPAN, did the Washington Post and the Guardian say there were multiple shooters? Why did they say that? That's important. Keep it in mind. Now, my detractors, and I have a few detractors, will say, well, Richie, news organisations are very competitive. And when something like this has happened, they are trying to gazump one another. And they are taking risks. And they are stating rumours, but stating them as if they are fact. Now, I am open to that possibility, because I am not a paid-up member of the Truther Industrial Complex. My name is Richie Allen, and I haven't got a Scooby-Doo as to why that happened on Friday. No idea. 50 people are dead. Their families are absolutely devastated, waiting for the bodies to be released back to them. We know this. Why it happened, how it happened, did the guy do it, did he do it on his own? I don't have a Scooby-Doo. No idea. And yes, it is possible that the reporting of multiple shooters might be down to bad practice by the mainstream news organisations. But it might not be. You see, don't jump right in with 2 feet. Allow yourself some wriggle room, because there are multiple possibilities here. That's important. It's important because one of them arrested had a gun. Now, you know, call me old conspiracy theorist, tinfoil hat wearing Richie if you want, but it's a bit of a coincidence to me that somebody would be in the area of a mass shooting, a civilian mind, and have a gun on him. Right, keep that in mind. We'll come back to that a little bit later on. More from the BBC. Reading again from the BBC, tributes have been paid for the 50 victims, while the first bodies are expected to be released today, as I said. About 34 people are in hospital receiving treatment for injuries, including severe gunshot wounds. A 4-year-old girl remains in a critical condition. Okay. It's the end of the BBC report that I'm reading from. Sky News has been broadcasting live from Christchurch for the last 2 days. Presenters standing in front of a memorial. That's what we've got, right? We've got a memorial, and we've got lots and lots of people coming to the memorial, and we've got the UK's news anchors standing there and doing their programmes live from there. We've seen this before, right? I have done lots of programmes on this, and it is an area of expertise of mine. It's my specialist field. I've talked a lot about it, and we're going to get into it again in a minute. Don't yawn. There's some new stuff in here. We've seen it before. Here's Sky News this morning at 8 a.m. UK time. I think that was around 5, 6. It might have even been 7 p.m. in New Zealand. Anyway, Sky News. Listen good.
Well, good morning. This is Sunrise Live from Christchurch in New Zealand, where we now know the death toll from those terror attacks here has risen to 50. Police say they found another body inside one of the mosques. They also say 34 people remain in hospital, and 12 of those are in intensive care. A 28-year-old Australian called Brenton Tarrant has been charged with one count of murder, but the police say other charges are likely to follow in the days to come. New Zealand is struggling with the shock of what happened here. The Prime Minister has been meeting families of some of those who died, and she told them that the bodies of some of those victims will start to be released for burial later today.
Yeah, she wore a hijab, or a hijab, I should say. Always get that wrong. I don't do it disrespectfully. She wore a hijab when meeting with these people. Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Premier. Find that a bit strange, but anyway. So this guy has been charged with murder, and he's been remanded in custody. He'll appear on April 5th, which is just under a month away. Well, more like 3 weeks away. And he didn't enter a plea. Thing is, that's a bit worrying about this, is that it's all been done in secret. The hearings on Saturday, for example, were held in closed session. No access for the public whatsoever. And when pressed on this particular point, the judge, dear listener, said it was in the interest of safety. Why? How could it be in the interest of safety? Last time I looked, New Zealand isn't the Wild West. I don't think there was any danger that the courthouse would be stormed by New Zealanders who would drag this man, Tarrant, out and hang him in the courtyard? Why the secrecy? And in this, there are fairly eerie similarities to the Anders Breivik case, which I covered during my time on the radio in Spain. Do you remember that? Anders Breivik, 8 years ago in Norway, killed dozens and dozens and dozens of people. Like Tarrant, Breivik had a manifesto which was very neat and very handy for the authorities and for the media. I'll tell you why in a minute, by the way, why the manifesto is very handy. I think you'll understand it, but I'm going to put some meat on the bones of it. Why, like Breivik, Tarrant attacked two places on the same day. And interestingly enough, like Breivik, Tarrant, who's currently in prison in Christchurch waiting for his hearing to begin in April, or his next appearance anyway, Breivik was also linked to far-right characters in the UK, people like Tommy Robinson. So a very interesting series of coincidences there. Not for a minute now am I saying that Robinson, or let's give him his real name, Stephen Lennon, or any other far-right goon, I don't believe they bear any responsibility here at all. I don't believe that at all. It's my opinion. I've said this many times over the years. Detestable, vulgar, horrific, repugnant as scum like Tommy Robinson is, and he's proper scum, you can't lay the blame for what happened in New Zealand at this guy's feet. You can't. But it's all very familiar, this, right? Anyway, Tarrant posted a manifesto just before the shooting began on Friday, and apparently he sent it to 30 officials, including Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister's office. Now, she confirmed this in a press conference earlier today. Here she is.
I was one of more than 30 recipients of a manifesto that was mailed out 9 minutes before the attack took place. It did not include a location. It did not include specific details.
Simple as that, right? I got it. Did she get it? Probably not. When you email these people, they don't see your emails. They get lots of emails, and they generally have helpers and secretaries sifting through those types of emails. Anyway, so his manifesto is called The Great Replacement, it's called, and it's been described as a rant about white genocide. That's what they're saying about it. It's been called a rant about white genocide. In it, Tarrant allegedly calls for an atmosphere of fear against Muslims. So he posted the document on Twitter before the shooting, but sadly his Twitter account has been disabled. He described himself in the manifesto as a regular white man. Is there such a thing as a regular white man? Also, he says he's European and not Australian, and that he grew up in a low-income working-class family. He wrote that his language, his culture, his political beliefs, his philosophical beliefs and identity are European. And most importantly, he said, my blood is European. This is very detailed stuff, isn't it? I'm going to read a little bit from it. I am just a regular white man from a regular family who decided to take a stand to ensure a future for my people. My parents are of Scottish, Irish and English stock. I had a regular childhood without any great issues. He went on to say that he planned the attack for 2 years. He describes himself in the manifesto as a ethno-nationalist and fascist. And he claims, as I said, to have planned it for 2 years. That's important. New Zealand wasn't his original choice as the target, but he had scoped it out for months. Now, the detail of this manifesto, dear listener, is of concern to me. It is. I'm not thrilled about the manifesto and the great detail it goes into. It's very explicit. Reading it in the newspaper this morning, again, having looked at it yesterday, it reminded me of the end of an episode of Scooby-Doo. Bit of Scooby-Doo there. Why? Why Scooby-Doo? What does that mean? Well, in 30 seconds, Daphne sums up the evidence against the guy whose mask they have just removed. The mask is an analogy for the manifesto, or the manifesto is an analogy for the mask. It's all very neat and very simple and very digestible. It's very easy for the viewer to comprehend. The manifesto, what does it do? The most important thing you'll hear this morning on British radio is that the manifesto removes any need for the media to ask any questions of anybody, right? It absolves everybody of their responsibility, doesn't it, right? You read that manifesto as a producer in a newsroom, as a copywriter, you don't have anything to do. It's all there. I want Muslims to live in an atmosphere of fear. I am taking a stand for my people. I am an ethno-nationalist and a fascist. I planned it for 2 years. Who writes that stuff, that level of detail, ahead of going out to shoot as many people as they possibly can? Really, white genocide is happening. I had a regular childhood without issues. Wow. So the manifesto means no need to look into it. Don't worry about it. You could say, if I was to be a bit cheeky, that the manifesto is like finding a passport at the scene, isn't it? It's all there in the manifesto. So those who write the copy for the autocue for Kay Burley, well, it's very simple. You're typing the autocue like this, right? You're typing, right? Right? And Kay reads it by looking into the lens. What does Kay say? A 28-year-old white nationalist went on a killing spree at two mosques, killing 50 people and injuring dozens. The man planned the attack for 2 years and did it because he believed Muslims are taking over. He wanted to take a stand for white people. Lovely. Lovely. You got it direct from the manifesto. When I was in radio, I became very disturbed at the fact that my news team would take wires, would take printouts from independent radio news and from Reuters and from AFP, and they would rewrite them and then go into the studio and tell the listeners live in a news bulletin what they had been told on the news wire. And this is exactly what has happened here. They have downloaded via Tinternet the manifesto and they are reading it out as if it is fact. Fact checking? As a real journalist, and I am, I like to say that because it winds certain people up. Qualified to the wazoo, not only to talk about this, but to do what I do. As a real journalist, let me tell you, the two most important words in your universe, in your life, in your job. Here we go. Fact checking. Fact checking. Wunderbar. So who in any newsroom in the world is reading these claims in this manifesto and fact checking them? Wow. 2 years, eh? He travelled around Europe, eh? He was a rabid white nationalist who hated Muslims, eh? Let's find out if that's fucking true! Let's ask some questions! No, let's just rewrite the manifesto and vomit it forth through the lens to the moronic fucking viewer who will sit there and take it in while munching on popcorn. Because this is an event. It's an event. It's a disaster for the people who've lost loved ones there. But for the rest of us, it's television. It's brilliant. Lovely. Now cue your politicians and others to say, we are one, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other. We will never be divided. They hate our way of life. Now the manifesto tells the whole story. No need to ask any questions. And what does the media do? I've written about this. Some of you who have been with me for years have heard me say this 1,000 times. Go and get a cup of coffee or a pint of Guinness. Because I'm going to say it again. And again, until it gets through the thick skulls of people who have just recently found the programme. Listen. The media creates an event. It creates a global event, or a Western global event, if there can be such a thing. Probably not. That's an oxymoron. The major media organisations broadcast, they rush to the scene and they set up camp. And like clockwork, they begin to present every single show from the scene of the crime. You've been with me now, listeners. Here's a question for you. Answers on a postcard. The first person to get it right gets a case of Guinness, courtesy of the Richie Allen Show. How long does this go on for? 72 hours? You're bang on. It goes on for 3 days. The on-scene producers, the people you never see behind the cameras, have to build a story, a narrative. The narrative is the community is devastated, torn to pieces. But it doesn't just affect them, it affects you, it affects us all, even if you're thousands of miles away. The presenter looks down the lens, always looking sad, speaking in a very somber voice, and interviewing heroes, witnesses, who witnessed heroism. That man was a hero. Look at him carrying one of the wounded. And at regular intervals, the police and ambulance services or first responders are hailed as heroes too. They're not heroes. They're trained to deal with the situation and do their job. That's what they trained for. They're not heroes. Then at 20 minutes to the top of the hour, you can set your watch by this, two people are brought on to debate what to do about extremism and about social media. And how we tackle extremism. So before we get into this, you've had the images of the flowers, the somber presenter who's sad. Do you remember Kay Burley tweeting out in Paris about the dog with the mournful eyes? Do you remember the ginger ninja way back? Unbelievable. Pathos, pathos, pathos. Bucket loads of it. So you have the presenter doing all of that, looking at the flowers, showing images of people wailing and bawling and crying and singing and all the rest of it. Then you've got people brought on to say they'll never stop us, this is our way of life, multiculturalism, they'll never divide us. And then we get to talk about extremism and how to deal with it. We need to ban people, we need to find Facebook, we need to proscribe groups of people. It's brilliant television in one sense, but what is it not? It's not the news! It's not the news! Right? Right! It's a theatrical production. That being said, Facebook live streaming this for 17 minutes is a concern, right? Little bit of a concern, actually. And again, you know, don't jump in with 2 feet. Have a look at it from all angles. There's something a bit wrong with that. Lots of talk about hate speech and how dangerous it is, and maybe we need to have new laws to stop hate speech. It gets worse than that, though. It's moved on a bit. It's moved on big style over the weekend. I'll tell you about that in a minute. It's 28 minutes past 11. Then after the debate, at about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and this is the same every hour now, another politician comes on to say that he or she is shocked at the appalling loss of life. I'd like to send my thoughts to the families. Thoughts? What the fuck are thoughts? That'll help them. Huh? Sending you my thoughts. Your child has been machine gunned to death. But it's alright, you've got my thoughts. And then the politician says the line they were brought on to say, because you've got to hear this line about 3 times in the broadcast. They will never divide us. We are a multicultural society and proud of it. Diversity. We will not be divided. This is why they hate us. Trite. You say, Richie. Trite is right. I would say tripe. It is fucking nonsense. It is nonsense. Replacing the daytime soaps, it's on in your house pretty much 18 hours a day. One of the 24-hour news channels. It's on, like Orwell said it would be. In vision, in your house, all the time. Telling you this shit. And then, to reinforce all of this, you get the payoff. You get the big finale. You get the presenter saying this, and you get what follows it. This is, to me, as somebody who's been doing this for many, many, many years, this is maddening to me that more people cannot see through this. Listen to this.
The flowers that have been laid there prompted a spontaneous response. Here's what happened there.
There's nothing spontaneous about what you're going to hear now.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us, and the world will live as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can.
It's brutal, isn't it?
No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of men.
And we've heard similar things here tonight. A choir singing now, another man performing a Maori haka.
Yeah, there's another attention seeker standing behind him on his own doing the haka. You can't make this stuff up.
The haka, the tributes across the country have been very, very powerful. The situation across the country is that it will return to normal, or it should return to normal tomorrow morning, but they're well aware it will be far from normal. There will be police presence at mosques. There will also be specialist teams available to support school children who are going back to school. A cabinet meeting, the Prime Minister says, will be held. And they will talk about the gun laws, which, of course, are a major focus of discussion as a result of what happened here. Feelings running very high in this country, as you can tell, right now. And people want some answers, but they also want the chance to grieve for what happened here.
Yeah. We can tell that it's a bit mad because there's a nutter doing the haka behind you on his own. Madman doing the haka, the beautiful New Zealand girl singing Imagine, sports stars turning up and crying. It's a festival of narcissism, isn't it? Attention seeking, the grief culture, the young woman, and I'll get hammered for this, a smartphone dwelling narcissist who can sing and saw an opportunity. I bet she has millions of Instagram followers now. You'll get hammered for that. I couldn't care less because it's true. There's nothing spontaneous about it. It is opportunism, virtue signalling. And I couldn't believe it over the weekend. Some arsehole in Levenjoom, which is around the corner in Manchester, a white guy stood in front of a mosque on Friday, and in his hands was a sign saying, "I'll stand watch while you pray." And of course he made sure that this went out on Twitter and Instagram, a virtue signalling even, attention seeking clown. Now he's got thousands and thousands of Twitter followers. You could disappear in a sea of this bullshit. It's so vast, isn't it? Spontaneous. A girl turns up and spontaneously starts singing Imagine, and the world's media film it. She'll be on the X Factor now pretty soon, if she wasn't already, that is. Thousands of Twitter followers. There, you'll be okay. Specialist teams going into schools to help children, he said. You know what I tell them? Fuck off. If my child is suffering and is worried and is quiet and is confused about what's happened, the kid can speak to me and ask me questions and we'll deal with it. It's something for the parents, not for specialist teams. This is mass mind control, mind programming, people crying, bawling their eyes out. And they've travelled hundreds of miles in many cases. I saw this in the centre of Manchester 3 years ago. Two years ago. I saw it with my own eyes. People who couldn't explain why they were there. Why did you come up on the train from Cornwall? Why? I don't know. I just felt I had to be here. Yeah, the fact that celebrities were turning up to show their solidarity. The fact that the world's media was here. Do you think that had something to do with it, maybe? Because you didn't know any of those people. And ultimately you couldn't give a shit because we've all been so desensitised to this. I mean, 1,000 people died in the Middle East last week. You know, not just in Yemen. There are bombs going off in Kabul and places like that. 300 fucking killed. Why don't we present our programmes from there? Yeah. Why don't we have a minute's silence for those people? A festival of fake grief and manufactured sentiment. Buckets of pathos. Buckets of it. And now you have the media explaining in very, very heavyweight programs, like the Andrew Marr show, explaining to you why this should matter to you, even though you are thousands of miles away. Listen to Andrew Marr speaking with the former Labour advisor, Ayesha Azarika, this morning. Listen to the first thing Andrew Marr says.
It has absolutely appalled everybody, of course. And one of the questions is, does it matter to us here? It's the other side of the world, but it has big implications for Muslims here, of which you're one.
It has big implications for Muslims here. It should matter to you. If it doesn't matter to you, there's something wrong with you. Let's hear Ayesha Azarika.
Absolutely. I mean, it was such a grotesque incident. When I woke up to the news, I have to say, I was not that surprised. I have felt a great anxiety about something like this happening. I think anyone who is of the Muslim community has felt that Islamophobia has been rising. There's been sort of a boiling frog syndrome. It has been rising and rising and rising. There are all these tropes about how if you're Muslim, somehow you're predisposed to terrorism, or language like Muslims are invading countries. Well, as a Muslim, I tell you this, we do not come to invade your country. We come to make a better lives for ourselves, to look after you when you're ill, to feed you late night food, to drive your cabs.
I don't need any Muslim to feed me late night food, by the way, or to drive a cab for me. Look, she makes a good point. The migrant crisis was driven by the imperialist forces of the United States, Israel, France and the UK wrecking Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan and trying to do the same to Syria. That's true. Muslims are not the enemy. Of course not. It's preposterous. However, try telling that to a working class dude, and I'm a working class dude, in Germany, for example, where Merkel said, we'll take a million. We'll take a million. Try and tell that guy that it isn't an invasion. It isn't an invasion, of course, when all the facts are laid out on the table. Of course it is not. These people have nowhere else to go. Far from being an invasion, what it is the weaponization of it by other parties for reasons that I'm not going to bore you to death with again. Divide and conquer, and once. To those people, it's an invasion. Struggling to get an appointment at your NHS surgery. It's an invasion. Used to be able to get an appointment. So many people here now can't get an appointment. Those people will see it as an invasion. They're not stupid. They're very bright. They're just as bright as us, but or as me, or as you. I don't know how bright I am. I think I'm reasonably bright. But they're not sophisticated. A huge difference between sophistication and intelligence. So they see it as an invasion. It's an invasion. Christ. Weaponized is what it is. Let's hear some more from Ayesha Azarika.
Abs to run your corner shops. We come and we serve communities, yet we are demonised, dehumanised and now terrorised.
But by who, though? Who's demonising and terrorising you? The far right in this country is not that prevalent. The far, far right. The knuckle draggers who would like to kick the living shit out of the nearest Asian man or woman, regardless of whether they even know if the person is a Sikh or is a Muslim or is Christian or whatever. They're a very rare breed indeed. Vast majority of people don't care about what you look like, what God you pray to, or what you do in your spare time, I would have said.
And I'm afraid we all have to take responsibility.
No, we fucking do not. I have no responsibility for Tommy Robinson and the Knuckle Dragon goons that support him. And he has no responsibility for me. Now, I'm not a nationalist, but pretend that I am for a minute a nationalist. He doesn't speak for me. And that's what the media is trying to do today. They're trying to twist it. Like they twist. I mean, the irony here, you could choke on it. The media sought to demonise Muslims and allowed that narrative to go unchallenged in the media, that all Muslims were, you know, we're thinking the same way on matters of geopolitics. But that's just bullshit. It's the same thing. What they did to Asian people in this country by equating Islam with terror, which is what knuckle-dragger goon Tommy Robinson does, they're now doing that to the far right. The same thing. It's incredible. It's not sophisticated, it's not clever, but it's what they're doing. Equating nationalist feelings or the sentiment that Britain, the UK, should have, you know, first of all, should be looking out for its own citizens. Not opening the doors to people when there isn't sufficient support to public services to make that feasible. Not doing that. Those are feelings of nationalism based around public services are being destroyed. But they want to equate that with the goons like Tommy Robinson and his pals. This is very important. It's not that difficult to understand. This is why when 5 or 6 weeks ago when the news channels rocked up to Westminster Square, this is why they, in the early days, sent in all these goons to abuse Kay Burley and scream abuse at the presenters to make it look like Brexiteers were basically, again, to use the term, knuckle-dragging morons. That's what's going on here. This is how it's being spun today. Anyway, what else did she say?
But this media platforms, the mainstream media, commentators and politicians. I was appalled that a prime ministerial hopeful, Boris Johnson, made very insulting comments about Muslim women last year.
There is a long gap between those kind of comments and what happened in Christchurch. I mean, it is different. And we also have to remember that the radicalisation of Islamists and the radicalisation of white extremists has been quite similar in some respects. It comes from the internet, it comes from, as it were, propagators of hate.
The one thing I will say is if you speak to experts, the cues that leaders give are very, very influential. But you're right, social media has played a big part. Look, I don't think social media has created these bad feelings. There were always people in society that had these bad feelings, but now, with social media, they can find each other, yeah. They can form communities, they can intensify.
Yeah, she's saying that social media is amplifying hate speech. And again, this is a common theme today. Remember, think back to what we said earlier on, no investigation of the facts, no examination of what happened, no journalist dispatched to Europe to find out where this guy Tarrant went, what he did, whom he met, and so on. No. This is where it's gone to. Conflating terrorism with nationalism, which is very unfair and very dangerous. In the same way, conflating Islamic belief, conflating Muslims with terrorism was very wrong, very unfair and very dangerous. Blame the internet. Call for hate crime legislation. We're going to hear some of that now. I think. Two locations, loads of guns, somebody arrested, one of them had a gun, but they've been released. Handlers, maybe. Did this guy have help? Handlers, maybe. No previous problems, his gym coach, his friends, his grandparents bewildered at the revelation that he was a right-wing nutter. Worth chasing up, isn't it? You know, I think back to my days in commercial radio, that's worth chasing up, that. What's going on here? Why didn't they notice? But we're told the reason they didn't notice is because he was very private about this and he did what he did in the comfort and in the privacy of his own room with his laptop. All very simple. Shadow Attorney General Shami Chakrabarty wants to govern the internet. Regulation. But regulation for social media companies. But really what that means is regulation for shows like this. That's what they're going to do. They are going to force. I don't use Facebook for the Richie Allen show. I put the show on YouTube these days, even though it's a pain in the arse. The show is on Podomatic. But Podomatic is social media. iTunes is social media. They are going to encompass iTunes, Spotify, and they are going to put pressure on these companies not to carry programs like this. Govern the internet. Shami Chakrabarty.
Well, I think that this happened on the other side of the world, but as you and others have pointed out, Aisha in particular, in the paper review, the world is shrinking and interconnected. And
so it matters to us. This is the reason why we send presenters out to do programmes all day long from New Zealand, because it matters. It's important. It means something to us. It's a smaller world now. Terrorism. You should be engaged with this.
The internet is part of that. Is part of that shrinkage. My own colleague Tom Watson has been talking about the role that social media can play in bringing hateful people together. And I think that it's time to really think about whether the internet can be an ungoverned space. You know, once upon a time,
people talk about it as the Wild West of the media.
Well, quite, and you know, in a sense, it's more like a new continent. But we don't leave new continents just to be regulated by the initial explorers. I think it's time that we, as Democrats, both nationally and more importantly internationally, start having a debate about how the internet is going to be democratically governed in a spirit of respecting human rights and the rule of law.
How are we going to govern the internet in the spirit of respecting human rights and the law? Well, all you got to do is, this is how they'll do it. The European Union will address this in the autumn. They will certainly address it next year. And they will draft legislation that basically says that when users of Facebook and of Twitter and of Google's YouTube and so on, when they have been deemed to have breached guidelines, laws about broadcasting and about writing, because a lot of people write, they don't broadcast, they write. Facebook, the European Union will then say, national parliaments in Europe, which are not really sovereign anyway, will have to go along with it. They will say, well, then you've got to compel the social medias, once we've deemed these particular people, these particular programs, these particular content creators, when we've deemed them to be hateful and harmful, you must delete them, deny them a platform. And it'll be very easy to extend that to internet domain hosts. So richieallen.co.uk is my website. It's hosted by Hayden looks after all this. I don't know anything about it. But it's hosted by a company that gives me the bandwidth to host my website, right? Pretty soon, those companies will be told not to carry the content. Don't carry the website. Google, delete the channel. It's already been done to me. It's not about me, remember. I'm just referring to me because I can talk about, you know, personally what happened over the last year or so. Facebook, delete them. Doesn't matter anyway, because shadow banning means it doesn't matter whether you're on Facebook or not. But you'll end up in a place where you will not feasibly be able to broadcast at all. Podcast hoster, don't host his podcast. He's been deemed to be in breach of article blah, 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 subsection blah, 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 hate speech. Got to get rid of him. Jesus, where will I put the Richie Allen Show now? I know. I'll go on a public speaking tour. Can't do that. Venues will be told you can't host him or her. Look at what's been happening to Gilad Atzmon this week again. A jazz musician. People phoning the venues, threatening the venues, with dire consequences for their financial future if they don't ban this hate speaker. Well, he doesn't say fuck all, actually. He plays the sax. Doesn't say anything. He's in an ensemble. He plays the sax. The music is amazing. People have glasses of wine, a few beers, they go home. There's no hate being spoke. This is where we're going. Shami Chakrabarty. Got to govern the internet.
Rule of law.
So in terms of what that might actually mean, I think Tom Watson and others have talked about a new...
Ah, Tom Watson. That champion of free speech. That socialist Tom Watson. What has Tom Watson been saying?
Better for these internet companies and to start to treat them like publishers.
I think there really is something in that. I mean, why...
There's something in that. Let's treat the social media providers as publishers. Again, bringing them into law, where we can say, you can't publish that, you can't, your fault. not the Richie Allen show, not the Maria Heller show, not Dean Henderson. No, no, it's your fault. You've got to ban them. You ban them, or we'll come after you. Banned, 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 banned. Oh, don't worry about it, folks. The Richie Allen Show will continue to broadcast on richieallen.co.uk. It won't be. Domain hosters or website hosting company, gotta delete that. It's hate speech. Great days, these.
Why should broadcast media and print media be subject to so much different standards than new media? I should say also, though, that mainstream media and indeed political actors like myself have a responsibility in relation to the tone of our discourse. I know there's been a lot of controversy about a Newsnight piece that went out on Friday, the day of the massacre, where an extreme far-right voice was left essentially unchallenged. No recrimination, but I do think we all need to reflect on editorial decisions that we make and also on the tone of our discourse about things like culture wars and invaders and immigration, this othering of minorities. It hasn't all been bleak, though.
We saw earlier this year, I reported on it extensively, the international conference about migration and the attempt, the forthcoming attempt to make it hate speech to criticise the notion of immigration. Do you hear what Chakrabarty said there? He's one of the most dangerous little women, little persons, little whatever you want to call her, in terms of the attack on free speech and independence and personal sovereignty. Listen to Chakrabarty here.
We all need to reflect on editorial decisions that we make and also on the tone of our discourse about things like culture wars and invaders and immigration, this othering of minorities. It hasn't all been bleak, though.
The day is coming, and that right soon, where you will not be able to talk about immigration. What about Jeremy Corbyn, then? The pretty useless Labour leader was on Sophie Ridge this morning. They talked about Brexit. I'm not going to bore you with any of that, but they did talk about New Zealand. Here's a snippet of that. Have a listen.
Your deputy leader, Tom Watson, has been saying that social media platforms failed the victims because, of course, we saw the very widespread uploading of the footage of the killings on platforms on the internet. Do you think he's right?
I think he's got a very important point there. But this was the most disgraceful far-right terrorist attack, and many security forces around the world have been, how shall I put it, slow to investigate far-right extremism, going right back to Timothy McVeigh in the USA and more recent attacks, including a far-right attack in my own constituency when Macromalley was killed. I think we've got to be far more aware of the dangers from the far-right. Tom is absolutely right that the social media platforms, which were actually playing a video made by this person who's now accused of murder, quite rightly accused of murder, all over the world, that surely has got to stop.
Is there anything that can be done on a practical level?
Immediately, those that control and own social media platforms should deal with it straight away and stop these things being broadcast. But that brings into the whole issue the question of regulation of social media. Because social media, and there's some very dark places in social media, is where this person was apparently inhabiting with his far-right extremist ideas, which ends up with 50 wholly innocent people dead in Christchurch. And a fear in multicultural communities all over the world. Are these kind of far-right extremists going to pitch up? I went to my mosque on Friday. And we stood out.
I mean, this is virtue signalling in the extreme now. Jeremy went to his mosque on Friday. What fucking bollocks is that? He's not a Muslim the last time I looked. But he went to his mosque. Why, Jezza? Why did you go to your mosque on Friday?
And we stood outside, and what we said was...
Oh, you stood outside then? You didn't go in? Didn't wash your feet, maybe? You had smelly socks, Jezza. You didn't want to take your shoes off, you dirty bastard. So you stood outside then?
An attack on a mosque, an attack on a synagogue, attack on a church, attack on a temple is actually an attack on all of us.
No, it's not. No, it's not. An attack on a synagogue, a church, a temple is not an attack on me. It's not. That is patently, Monumental bollocks, that. It is not an attack on me or on my way of life. It's an attack on whatever venue, whatever institution that it happened at. That's all it is, full stop. That's all it is, right?
We have to come together.
Got to come together.
As communities.
How concerned are you about the impact of the far right on social...
See, it's a script, isn't it? Corbyn, it's just a script. It was spoon-fed to them, intravenously maybe. It's just a script, got to come together, multiculturalism.
Far right on social media.
I think it's quite serious. I think far right extremism is very dangerous. The only way to deal with it is to say quite simply, the far right, who always search for a minority to blame, be they Jewish people, be they Muslim people, be they Bangladesh or any other group of people, don't offer solutions to anything. The only solutions we have to people's issues and problems, the great issues facing this world, climate change and everything else, is people coming together.
Climate change. If we all come together, we'll put an end to climate change and we'll put an end to far-right terror and fundamentalist Islamic terror if we all come together in a spirit of multiculturalism and togetherness. You know, the irony of that is, ultimately, that's actually 100% true. Really is. But the system is very clever. And the system uses things like what happened on Friday to divide people along the lines of religion, sexual orientation and ethnicity, to hate one another, to despise one another, to not communicate or interact with one another. It's the great irony. While Corbyn and all the other arseholes like him say we've got to come together, there are forces working very hard to make sure that never happens. One day in the future, Muslims, Sikhs, Jews, Christians will realise that we all have the same fucking enemy. That cabal behind the depopulation agenda, which is unfolding in front of our eyes day by day, which is not targeting whites exclusively or Asians exclusively or blacks exclusively or whatever. It's targeting everybody. It's a fact. But the heroes of the truther industrial complex, like Tommy Fake News Goon Robinson and his counterparts on the far left, will be promoted to keep you at loggerheads, to keep you stuck and mired in your identity group of choice, in a never-ending race to the bottom. Who can claim to be the most victimised group of all time? It's us, we're the biggest victims, it's us. No, it's us. Fuck off, that's hate speech. No, it's us. And the merry-go-round goes on and on and on and on and on. It never ends. We'll never see any examination of what happened in New Zealand. And you know the biggest victim there? The families of the people who died. Because the media is letting them down wholesale. It is their job to find out what really happened on Friday in Christchurch. The fact is, we'll never know. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow at 5. That's Monday. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Look after yourselves and one another. I'm leaving you with the Dubliners.